Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. Shout out to all my new channel members and existing ones, of course, and my patrons. You guys are what keep the Dark Forest spooky. Now, sit back and relax around that fire and enjoy this Wendigo tale. The summer before my freshman year of college, my uncle called me up and asked if I would be willing to help him fix up his cabin during the summer's warm weather. I eagerly agreed because I hadn't been to the cabin since I was a little guy, so I was more than excited to go back. Plus, I was basically the only adolescent in the family, and I surely wasn't going to turn down my elderly uncle's request to help with physical labor. A week before I was supposed to head out for the cabin, I got another call from my uncle. Unfortunately, it turned out he had just suffered a pretty severe heart attack. The guy was as strong as an ox and wouldn't let anything knock him down on his ass, so I was pretty surprised to hear that he wasn't going to work on the cabin that summer. He assured me that it would be okay and we could just do it next summer, but I had just turned 18. I was young, dumb, and full of, well, you know. Anyways, I practically begged him to let me go to work on the cabin myself, and eventually he did give in. My uncle sent me a list of the tasks and instructions to help complete them. He only anticipated me being up there for about a week or two at max. However, when I saw the list, I was immediately concerned. It was obvious that my uncle had overestimated my abilities and clearly held nothing back and gave me every task he could think of. I had no idea how to do half the things on that list, so I was expecting to be at the cabin a lot longer than expected. I was wrong. The road to the cabin is long, windy, treacherous, and made of loose dirt. On one side is a large rock face, while the other side looks straight down into a gorge filled with lush green pine trees. I understand that I'm explaining this in a way that makes it sound rather dangerous, and that is true, but I truly can't emphasize the beauty of the landscape. Whether it was the risk of driving off the edge of a cliff, or the excitement of laying eyes on the cabin for the first time in 10 years, I was sweating. I could feel the little beads dribble down my side in almost a ticklish manner chilling my torso. After around 20 minutes of following that daunting path, I came around the final corner and there staring back at me was the cabin that I loved so dearly. Holy crap, did that thing look rough? You know, the cabin from the Evil Dead? Yeah, like that. I immediately knew that I had a lot of work cut out for me, but part of me was ecstatic at the thought of completing such difficult chores. I imagined bragging to all my new friends I'd make at college about the time I single-handedly fixed my family's cabin. When I got out of the truck, it was sometime in the late afternoon. I knew I wouldn't be able to get much done that night, so I walked around the property and did a brief inspection of the area. Everything seemed to be just fine. I remember seeing a cluster of grayish fur on one of the trees. I suppose it could have been from a deer, but now looking back at it, I think it was foreshadowing the encounter I would have later that night. After I finished my walkthrough, I wandered over to the small babbling brook that runs along the side of the property and dipped my right hand into the cold mountain stream. I cupped my hand and scooped out some of the water into my mouth. The water was clean, clear, and tasted real. Unfortunately, not many people have the privilege of tasting clean, natural water. As I stood up from the creek, I thought about how lucky I was to be there, and for the first time, I really took in my surroundings. While I scanned the tree line and hills that surrounded the cabin, I suddenly realized that the entire area looked different from how I remembered it. I mean, it all looked the same, but so much more dead. Not only was the cabin way past the point of being rustic, but many of the trees surrounding the property had been turned a sickly brownish gray, and a lot of the grass had either died or have been washed away by the heavy rains that frequented the area. While it made me sad to see, it didn't raise any alarms. My dad had grown up in Montana and had educated me on pine beetles when we visited his hometown. They were a species of beetle that came from British Columbia and infected many of the forests of the northwestern United States. So, I merely assumed that they were behind the death of so many of the trees and the cabin had simply succumbed to years of neglect after my elderly uncle could no longer make frequent trips up to the mountain. At this time, my stomach growled so loud I thought it might have been a frog hiding somewhere in the creek. Upon realizing that it came from my gut, I promptly made my way to the truck, unloading some of the food and gear, and then headed for the fire pit that sat in front of the cabin. At least, what was left of the fire pit. It clearly hasn't seen use in the last 10 years either. All but two of the small stones which created an almost perfect circle still stood in place, and unsurprisingly, there were no charred pieces of firewood or piles of light gray ash to prove that fires had once been common here. So, I gathered some more rocks from the creek and completed the ring and made my way over to the stockpile of firewood that remained behind the cabin. Thankfully, the wood was covered so rain never got to it, but the thought of a large black widow digging its sleek fangs into my flesh sent chills down my spine. There were all too many spiderwebs, but thankfully no spiders in sight, so I grabbed 4 medium pieces of wood and made my way back to the fire pit. After stacking the wood over some crumpled up newspapers I had brought with me, I tossed a match in and took a deep breath as I sat on one of the large logs that bordered the fire. I waited a while for the flames to die down before I skewered a hot dog and began roasting it over the open fire. Nothing beats that feeling. A long day of driving out in the wilderness, topped off with a delicious Hebrew National cooked over a wild flame. Yeah, needless to say, 18-year-old me felt like he was on top of the world about right then. I chowed down on my meal, munching on some chips and sipping on a beer I may or may not have snagged from the fridge before my father could interject. Upon filling my once empty stomach, a cold breeze caused me to shiver, duplicating the sensation of someone breathing down your neck. I swiveled around almost instinctively, and while I didn't explicitly see anything right then, I was pretty sure I heard some branches crunch under something heavy. The feeling of being on top of the world suddenly faded as though the true feeling of being alone started to set in. As fast as I could throw the remaining food into my bear canister, tied a knot on top of the canister, and flung it over a nearby branch. There weren't any grizzlies in Central Oregon as far as I knew, but having a mama bear and her 2 cubs waltz into my campsite was not my agenda, so I took the necessary precautions regardless. I had originally planned on sleeping inside the cabin, but when I saw the state of the cabin, I quickly decided on sleeping in the truck. Despite being summertime, the sky was quickly flooded with darkness. I grabbed a bucket of water from the creek and put the fire out all the way before making my way for the truck. I sat in the passenger seat, reclined the chair as far back as I could, threw a blanket over myself, and closed my eyes for the night. I woke up in the middle of the night, surrounded by blackness and the pounding of rain against the windshield. Initially, I assumed that was the rain which had awoken me, but I was proven wrong when I heard a blood-curdling screech coming from the trees. I shot up out of my prone position, made sure all the doors were locked, and put my keys into the ignition. As soon as the truck started, I powered its headlights on. Nothing. I pushed the left lever forward and toggled the truck's blinding headbeams on. Nothing. But then I saw movement. I couldn't tell what it was at first, but I thought I could make out antlers, no different from that of an elk. But then it stood up on 2 legs. The lights caught the creature's eyes, reflecting back an equally blinding light. It raised its wolf-like head and let out a howl that sounded like a mix between a cougar and Godzilla. It then became apparent what the creature was hunched over, the large-bodied corpse of a fully grown American black bear. Its head lowered as it set its sight on the truck, letting out a visible snarl. It dropped to what appeared to be the head of the bear from its clawed left hand, as its humanoid body covered in patchy gray fur began to make its way towards me. I practically jumped into the driver's seat, threw it in reverse, and flung the truck around as fast as possible, narrowingly avoiding the creek and somehow not getting stuck in the muddied ground. However, My relief was short-lived when I saw the tree which sat in the middle of the road. I don't know if the storm toppled the large pine tree, or if the creature back near the cabin was really that powerful. I had no intentions to find out, but what choices did I have? The only road was blocked by a collapsed tree, and right behind me was this 8-foot-tall, hulking monstrosity who just decapitated an adult bear. My questions would soon cease to matter, as I heard the rush of water to my right. I got a quick glance at the brownish tsunami that had been caused by the night's torrential downpour, right before the mudslide shot down the rock face and swiftly pushing the large truck over the edge of the gorge. I must have blacked out when the truck was hit by the mudslide, because I have no memory of what happened immediately after that. What I do remember is waking up still shrouded in darkness. My ass was wet with what I assumed to be water which leaked into the truck from the mudslide. However, I soon realized that whatever I was sitting on was much different from the cushioned seat I was in previously. My vision was foggy, and so was my mind, but slowly consciousness crept over me, and I started to realize I was no longer in the safety of the truck. When I heard the bear earlier that night, the truck proved to be a safety blanket of sorts. I knew that as long as I was in the truck, I was protected. Well, now I was no longer in that safety blanket, and I was most certainly no longer protected. I attempted to stand up, but the ground slid out beneath me as I was standing on a bunch of marbles. A rattling followed. It was similar to the sound of sticks clacking together. I felt the ground around me, and my hands instinctively found a round, dry object. I picked it up and tried to figure out what it was based off feeling alone. If it was pitch black outside, wherever I was now was Vanta black in comparison. I don't know if it was the concussion that I clearly had, or just plain denial, but I knew what I was holding. I didn't want to believe it. A bone of some kind. A bone the size of a pomegranate. A bone with a dome-like structure. A bone with two eye sockets. I was not just holding a bone. I was holding a human skull. A child's skull. I dropped it immediately when I realized what I was holding. The crack that echoed through the layer made my heart sink. If that thing was in here, it definitely heard the ruckus I just caused. A few moments passed and I heard nothing. However, the light slowly began to filter in through the entrance, revealing my surroundings. There were so many bones, human and animal. The light also revealed that the walls, floor, and ceiling were all made of stone. A little drip from somewhere in the cave echoed and I started to think about the monster I'd seen earlier. I had only encountered it at night, and this was clearly its home. I put two and two together and realized that thing would soon be home upon sunrise. I quickly collected myself and started rummaging around aimlessly, trying to come up with a plan, or find a sharp bone or something. I was in a life or death situation, and my lizard brain was going full force. The beast would kill me, or I would kill it. After rummaging for a few minutes, I heard yet another screech coming from outside. It wasn't in the cave yet, but it was coming home soon. Right then, my eyes caught a bright green fabric of a large backpack. I scrambled through the bones and made my way over to the bag, which upon closer inspection was still attached to its owner. Needless to say, there wasn't much left of him besides the ribcage that the bag's strap was caught on. I yanked and yanked, eventually hearing the snap of the rib breaking off. As soon as the bag was in my hands, I reached for the zipper. Digging through the bag's pouches, I found some rotten food, presumably a sandwich they had packed for that day hike, some socks, an empty water bottle, and a flare gun. I let out a small yelp of excitement, thinking that I'd found what just may save my life. Just then, I heard another screech, much louder this time, pounding off the walls of the damp cavern. Just moments later, I heard the thumping of footsteps enter the cave. I did my best to recreate the position I awoke in. I didn't have time to make an elaborate plan, but I came up with something that might just save my life. My eyes were closed, but I could see it closing in on me. I held the flare gun under my back in my right hand, waiting for just the right moment. I soon felt its warm breath hit my face like a train hitting a brick wall. The stench was unbearable, a combination of decomposing tissue and rotting teeth. I held my breath as best I could, but when it let out another screech point blank, I vomited a little in my mouth. I'm lucky it didn't deafen me, but the small burp I let out surely let it know I was wide awake. I opened my eyes. It roared again, spewing stinking slobber all over me. I took my chance and raised the small flare gun directly into its snout and pulled the trigger. Click. Click. Frickin' thing worked, damn it! I yelled in the same way one might yell a battle cry, pulling the trigger once more. The bright red flare shot instantly into the beast's mouth, soaring into the back of its throat. It staggered, clearly thrown off guard by the bizarre stunt I had just pulled. It screeched. This time, however, the screech ended in a whimper, as its wolf-like head popped like a balloon. Each of its eyeballs bursted out of their sockets as red cracks began to form all over its head, and soon enough those cracks began to glow a vibrant red. I'm not ashamed to admit that I cracked a small but short-lived smile as each individual piece of the skull splattered the cave walls. I heard the antlers bounce off the stone of the cave and eventually clatter to the floor. The body wobbled as the knees grew weak under the weight of its enlarged abdomen and collapsed to the ground. I stood up, dropped the flare gun, and started to make my victorious limp to the mouth of the cave. I took one last look at the hideous remains that laid in front of me, still spewing blood out from its neck. Even though its brain matter painted all surrounding surfaces, it still made me shiver in fear. I thought of each piece flying back into place as if someone had recorded and played it in reverse. With that disturbing thought, I decided I didn't want to wait around to see if it would happen or not, so I hobbled the rest of the way out of the cave. When I got out, I looked back into the darkness one more time. No eyes peered back at me. Nothing came running out to get me. It was just me and the darkness. I followed the creek and it brought me back to the spot where I had previously indulged on some delicious mountain water. With familiar surroundings around me, I began to relax somewhat but still shivered from the aftershock of adrenaline. From there, I followed the road down to where the truck had pushed over the edge. When I got there, there was still some muddy water running down the cliff in the form of a small waterfall. But for the most part, the rain had come to an end, and the wave of mud had come as quickly as it had gone. I peered over the edge and saw the bright red truck upside down about 100 feet downhill. I thought about going down and grabbing my phone from the truck, but with my bum leg I knew it would be too risky, so I made my way back to the road by foot. By the time I reached another house, my legs were aching and my head pounded so hard I thought my skull was going to explode too. The light orange of sunrise had begun to fade into the dark tone of sunset. I must have been walking for at least 8 hours and I was exhausted. I made it up the 4 steps, knocked on the large wooden door, and collapsed. About 2 hours later, I awoke once again, this time in a greenish-blue bed. I was now wearing a spotted white gown, and I had an IV pumping into my arm. I instantly recognized my surroundings as the hospital and rested my head on the pillow, letting out a sigh of relief. It wasn't until the next morning that I would speak with anyone. My parents drove the same long trek I did the day prior, the previous night, and got to the hospital later than they would have liked. However, they let me get my much-needed rest, and then they proceeded to grill me the next morning. Me and your mother are so, so proud of you for making it to the Henderson's property, son. And we are so thankful that you are still with us, but please tell us what happened out there. My dad's voice shook as tears formed in his eyes. I scanned the room and saw that there were 2 cops standing the opposite side of me. I sat up in my bed and then proceeded to tell them exactly what had happened, not leaving out one detail. They were obviously very skeptical, but I had shown up on a stranger's doorstep covered in blood that wasn't mine, and as far as they knew, I was alone up there. I felt like I needed to tell the story the way it happened, regardless of the fear of being judged, and thankfully, they believed me. A week later, I was sitting in bed with the cast, watching movies and playing video games, when my family was contacted by the police. Apparently, they had found the cave and the bones and it. They were able to match the bones to around 30 missing campers, hikers, and hunters that have been stalked, killed, and dragged into the bottom of the cave. They claimed that my encounter was actually some feral cannibal that decided to wear an animal's head on its own. That's some bullcrap, huh? Anyways, that happened around 7 years ago. Nowadays, I teach biology at a community college near Seattle. That encounter changed my life forever, and not just mentally. I know the police were wrong, not because of my memory, but because I still have the foot-long scars that show its claws left on my back. After my experience, apparently they demolished the cabin to prevent other potential feral people from taking shelter there, and they gated off the road. My uncle passed away a few months later, but not before I got to tell him what had happened. He was astounded to hear about it, but he was aware of the cave. He told me that he had explored that cave when he was younger, only to find nothing. I recently heard of a very similar incident in Oregon, not too far from where my uncle's cabin used to be. I know that whatever I encountered is long dead, but if someone else had a similar run-in, does that mean that there are more of them? I don't know for sure, but I want to find out, which is exactly why I'm going to Oregon next week to interview the victim.